WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Chase Mullane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Dial it like you say it, and you will get in touch with the program. Write it down. Call us up. We love to hear from our listeners. Coming up later tonight, we will be talking about Texas. We will be talking about what happened. Is it a gun issue? Is it a mental health issue? Is it a combination of a lot of different things?
Is it an America's becoming the worst issue?
Is it?
Becoming? Yeah. I don't know if it's becoming. I think we might be there.
I actually was thinking the other day about our annual end of the year show, which typically is the worst of. That's what we've done every single year, sort of as a joke, because everyone else does the best of at the end of the year. So we've been doing the worst of. In the hopes that some one of these years, things might get better. And
and every year it keeps getting worse.
And it does. And it's astounding to me how it keeps getting worse. And so I'm thinking I may actually change the nature of that show. Maybe we'll talk about good things at the end of this year. I don't know.
But we haven't made the call yet. Less and less and less good things to speak about. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Every day, I said the other day that it's becoming more shocking if there's nothing terrible happening in the news. That's sort of become the rule.
Yeah. And we're getting a mass shooting a month now.
I mean, a mass something or other. Like, what? There's, in the last 3 or 4 weeks, we've had 3 people that are just like, screw everybody, I want to kill a bunch of people.
Right. Well, you have to separate out the mass shootings from the terrorism.
Oh, now we do, because they're too close together, so we have to put them into categories.
Because we got a couple of different things that are going on, and none of them are good. None of them are good. It's all, yeah.
Quite true.
Yeah, so that's where we are. We're going to be talking about that later tonight. I wish we weren't. I wish we didn't have to talk about another one of these, but, you know, America is going to be what it's going to be. We've also got the apparently turning back the clock turned on the cold this year.
Evidently so.
Which I don't approve of, but...
Guys, I just moved back from Los Angeles. Someone lend me a sweater.
Yeah, you're going to need a bunch this week. Talk about that, too. In the meantime, what else have we got going on in the world, Chase Blaine?
Well, so, speaking of terrible things, a former Boston news anchor says her teenage son was allegedly sexually assaulted by Kevin Spacey last summer. Heather Unruh, a former anchor at television station WCVB, told reporters today that Kevin Spacey bought her starstruck then 18-year-old son drink after drink after drink, that's a quote, at a crowded restaurant in Nantucket, Massachusetts in July of 2016, and then, quote, stuck his hand inside my son's pants and grabbed his genitals, end quote, without consent. When the actor went to the restroom, a concerned woman who had apparently witnessed the alleged groping came to Unruh's son's side and told him to run. He ran as fast as he could, ending up at his grandmother's house, where he told family members. This comes at the heels of the many other allegations that have come out against Kevin Spacey. And in my personal opinion, it does not look like it's going to be the last.
No, it certainly does not seem to be that way. Kevin Spacey is what we in the business call a serial predator, mm-hmm. allegedly, apparently. You have to say allegedly because nothing has been proven in a court of law yet.
True. Yet being the operative word.
Yet being the operative word. But at the same time, as I've said before, when you have this many people coming forward making allegations, there is generally some fire to go with the smoke.
Well, and it's just like the Cosby thing, absolutely, where it's, okay, one or two people say it, they're just trying to get some face time with the media. Once it becomes 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 9, that's when things get a little murky and get a little, I think there might be some truth to this.
Yeah.
Well, and it's weird, too, because my first encounter with Kevin Spacey was when American Beauty came out. I've been, you know, really into films since I was 8 or 9. And my parents wouldn't let me see American Beauty because they didn't want me to witness all of that. But in that movie, he is essentially a sexual predator.
Yes. Yes, he is.
And I mean, and against a woman, but I'm sorry, I'm against a girl. But it is, there's always been this, I've actually met Kevin Spacey. I don't know if I've told you this.
They say in Hollywood that there are two general theories of how you cast actors. In one, the actor goes to the role, which is what somebody like Meryl Streep does, where you play someone who is totally and completely unlike you. And in the other, the role goes to the actor.
Yeah.
So maybe Kevin Spacey was a good choice for American Beauty.
Because he's a creepster.
Yeah.
Well, I like to call it Paul Rudd syndrome.
But you've met him. And how was he when you met him? I'm sure he was personable.
Oh, creepy as hell.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, personable, but still incredibly. It was one of those, like, he's one of those people that, even though he's not doing anything wrong, you feel like he has the capability to do so.
Oh, yeah. I know the type.
I'm sitting across from one.
Oh, come on. Come on.
I'm messing with you, Derek. But no.
I'm mostly harmless.
Honestly, though, like, that's when I had to resist the urge to post about this on Facebook, because when the news broke about both him having allegations against him and him being homosexual, which I thought was the lamest response to all of that.
Yeah.
Like, well, I've heard these things have been said about me, but I should mention that I'm gay. It's like, do you think that that's suddenly going to make it go away?
Yeah.
If anything, that makes it worse, because people too often liken homosexuality to pedophilia, and they're absolutely not the same thing.
Yeah.
And so if anything, he set the gay cause back by being like, here's this, but here's that.
I don't know that he necessarily sets the cause back.
No, he doesn't set the cause back, but I'm saying, like, it's not.
It certainly rubs. Among people who are predisposed to dislike homosexuals, it gives them more ammunition.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, is that not that, like,
those people are in the minority as they should be.
Obviously, Kevin Spacey doesn't speak for the entire homosexual community, but that being said, him trying to brush what he has, as Derek said, allegedly done under the rug by being like, but I'm gay, is
not a good look.
Is not a good look.
Not
and is helping
look.
No one, including him. If anything, it just makes him look like a... can I say that word on the radio?
No, I don't think you can. Meanwhile, Gay Talese, did you see this? Gay Talese was at the New York Public Library Gala last night, and somebody asked him about Kevin Spacey, and he said, I hate that actor that spoke up against him. Why should your career be ruined for 10 minutes of something that you did? I'm paraphrasing. And it's like,
oh my God, I hate people. You guys are cool, though.
The immediate response to Gay Talese was what you might expect, with people basically saying, shut the hell up.
Yeah. Applause to them. That is insane.
Yeah, that's... I don't know how you could even say that.
Like, well, it reminds me of...
But let's keep in mind, there are people out there. I will give Gay Talese credit for representing a point of view that has wisely been underreported to this point, because most people have enough sense to keep their mouths shut about it.
Well, that's reminiscent of... Oh, God. I'm actually kind of glad I can't remember his name. But that frat boy that sexually assaulted a girl, and his father came out and said,
yeah,
it seems weird to ruin someone's future over 10 minutes of action.
Yeah.
And actually on this show, I said, it takes about 10 seconds to murder somebody.
Yeah.
Do you think that that should not ruin their life?
Hey, Roman Polanski still has a career, so maybe things will work out for Kevin Spacey. You never know.
Crazier things have happened.
It's true.
In national news today, President Trump warned North Korea not to underestimate the United States, vowing to defend against intimidation by Kim Jong-un's regime, while issuing an urgent call for the global community to neutralize the nuclear threat posed by the country. In a lengthy speech to South Korea's legislative body, Trump also urged quick action from fellow world powers to stop the North through trade, calling out rivals China and Russia by name. Trump also addressed Kim Jong-un directly appealing to him to abandon his regime's weapons program and accept the United States' offer of, quote, a path to a better future, end quote.
Not going to happen.
Yeah, like that.
Topping list of things that are not going to happen is North Korea abandoning its nuclear program. Because it's what keeps them relevant.
That's exactly. Like, that's why I think this, that's why I thought this was worth mentioning. It's just like, how vapid are you that you think this is going, like, being like, hey guys, is going to make any sort of a difference?
Well, you've got to keep in mind that Trump has to say something. And this is this is part of the way that international diplomacy
is conducted. He has to say something like Teen Beat when I was 12 had to say something.
No, but this is part of the way that international diplomacy is conducted. The statements made by a president or secretary of state or anybody like that are meant directly for the ears of the enemy. And when you make a statement like this, you are simultaneously saying, we support our allies in the region. We're not going to back down from that. But you're also saying to the enemy, listen, if you test us, it's not going to end well. But there's a way, but there's another way that we can move forward with this. So this is a statement primarily meant for North Korean, South Korean, and Japanese consumption. Where in the United States, everybody's going, look at me, Trump's talking again. It was a good statement. I think it was the right statement to make.
I think that the first part was absolutely, I mean, it warranted. But it's a little, I hate that I can't think of what word I'm trying to find right now. But it was a little the way my siblings talked to me to say that they should follow us on a path to a better future. It was a little conceited. It's not the proper word.
This is what a lot of diplomacy sounds like. You know, if you.
But it's just basically like looking down on them and being like, I know the way.
Remember Obama's. Blah, 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 blah. Remember Obama's red line in the sand. There's another one. It's like, I'm drawing a red line in the sand. Well, that's about as childish as you get. And then he backed away from that one. So you get this kind of stuff happening in diplomacy all the time.
But that's the thing, is he backed away from that one. Trump never backs away from these things.
Well, I don't think Donald Trump wants to go to war with North Korea. I don't think anybody wants war with North Korea. But North Korea insists on, they've actually calmed down recently. They haven't shot any missiles over Japan lately, which is a big plus. But they insist on ratcheting things up. And nobody knows what's going through Kim Jong-un's mind while he's doing this.
And God bless those who do.
China is more than happy to have a nuclear North Korea acting as a buffer between America's influence in South Korea and mainland China. Because despite being the largest and most powerful military nation on the planet, China is really concerned that the United States might get a foothold on their border. I don't know why, but they are. It's sort of like asking Russians why they're afraid of Germans. There is a lot of history there of Russians being occupied and shot at and murdered and abused by Germans. So Russians are more afraid of Germans than anybody else on the planet.
Fair point.
And the Germans are like, no, we're not like that anymore. And the Russians are like, we don't care.
I quote Rodney King, can't we all just get along?
Yeah, apparently not, because
yeah, evidently
everybody has to get their, you know, geopolitical rocks off with this stuff.
It's I am allowed to say this on the radio. It's a penis measuring contest. In my personal opinion, it's just every country being like, I'm going to show you how big my bombs are. I'm going to show you how not scared of your bombs I am. Blah, 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 blah. That's what all of this is. Over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. We've been doing this with North Korea for I don't know how long, especially since Trump became president. It's been I forget what he called, what did he call Kim Jong-un? He called him
Rocket Man.
Rocket Man.
Rocket Man. Yeah. We love Rocket Man.
Like, it's a bunch of men who are total wussies. I was going to say another thing. Who are total wussies trying to be like, no, you're the wussy.
But
no,
you're the wussy.
But here's no, you're the wussy.
But here's
no,
the thing.
You're the wussy.
I will agree with that statement to an extent, because internally in North Korea and in China, where you have leadership that is afraid of the people and leadership that is to some extent afraid of the military, there is that need to look strong, to say, I will not back down in the threat of, or in the face of these threats, because if you back down, especially if you're North Korea, there's some general sitting there saying, Kim's not strong enough, take him out, put the next guy in.
Oh, absolutely, but there's a different difference between saying that and getting it forth and having everyone hear you and just beating it to death. Like, they're beating a dead horse. They keep going back and forth. It feels like girls fighting in middle school.
Well, the other side of it, and the other part, the part of Trump's statement that you hate the most about the shining path forward, is very deliberate, because part of the reason that North Korea is...
condescending. That's the word I was looking for. Sorry.
Maybe you could make that case, but part of the reason you have to make that statement is that North Korea's position has been that the United States is prepared to go to war with them. Any moment now, war is going to break out with the Americans. The Americans are going to invade. And when Trump says there is another path forward, it's him signaling, no, we're not going to invade you. We don't want war with you. We would like peace.
Yeah.
And North Korea, Kim, doesn't want to hear that. And the military doesn't want to hear that. Because as soon as you remove this existential threat of the United States, the Korean people are going to rise up and overthrow that government. Without question.
Knock on wood.
The only thing Kim Jong-un is more afraid of than the military is his own people. And that's a corner that they've backed themselves into, because that entire country's identity is rooted in this idea that the United States is coming to kill us.
So actually, you're right. In that vein, even though that does, I still hate almost everything Donald Trump says. In that vein, I think you are absolutely right, and I hadn't looked at it that way, which is that you're right. It's basically like going on the, not even going on the defensive, just saying, oh, that thing that you're threatening me with, yeah, you could do that, but how about instead we hug?
Yeah.
And then if you still threaten me, then you look like the jerk.
Yeah. The reality is, what you want to say is, would you like food instead of this threat of war?
Yeah.
And North Korea's answer is going to be no, because if the Americans walk in with food, now not only have you removed the existential threat that is keeping the people in line, they're well-fed and better able to rise up and overthrow the government. So, good luck sorting that one out. In world news, both the Middle East and Wall Street were roiled by actions in Saudi Arabia over the weekend as Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman moved to consolidate his power. In a sweeping corruption crackdown, 11 princes and their associates were arrested on charges of money laundering, bribery, and extortion, including Prince Al-Walid bin Talal, who was well-known in international investing circles and frequently appeared on television. The Saudis have also accused Iran of an act of war after Houthi rebels in Yemen fired a missile at Riyadh Airport on Saturday. The declaration raises the possibility of direct armed conflict between Iran and Saudi Arabia, who have jockeyed for influence in the Middle East for decades.
Are we super surprised?
There's an interesting sideline to all of this. Donald Trump tweeted in the middle of all of this stuff coming out of Saudi Arabia that the Saudis know exactly what they're doing. And Jared Kushner, just a week before this crackdown began, spent a lot of time sitting down with the Crown Prince. So the belief in broader diplomatic and intelligence circles is that everything that Mohammed bin Salman is doing is being done with the blessing of the United States. And really what he's doing is he's trying to isolate and remove anybody who would oppose him.
Yeah.
Anybody who backed the other
that
prince.
That which came before him.
The coked up prince who he jumped over. All of his associates are the ones that are being rounded up. Now, the other interesting thing about this is 70%, I don't know how you get to this number, but 70% of Saudi Arabia's population is under 30.
Wow.
And they love bin Salman. The young people in Saudi Arabia love bin Salman. In the big picture, he is attempting to make the country less dependent on oil. He's trying to diversify it. We've talked about
this.
Women are going to be able to drive. He's going to build a new city on the border with Jordan that is going to be an innovation center. He's trying to take Saudi Arabia into the 21st century. That's not going to sit well with some people. Both
who want it to stay in, I don't know, the 10th century.
Right. And particularly people in the House of Saud.
Yeah.
Because what you have going on here is palace intrigue writ large. Because there is the one family that controls that country. And I'm sure not everybody is happy that the king decided to skip over the rightful heir. Because when that first happened a year ago, I brought this up on the air. And I said, I don't know what the outcome of this is going to be. Because unless Bin Salman has some way of fending off the rivals, this could be a very short-lived crown princeship. Well, he seems to have found his way of doing that. And he seems to be doing it with the full support, and one would argue the protection, of the United States of America.
And of, as you mentioned before, of the many people, particular, I can't believe that that much of the population is under 30, but particularly the citizens of his country who are, like, it kind of beckons to what we were just talking about with North Korea, whereas if you have the support of the majority of the people and the United States, this perhaps could be an example of that.
Yeah.
It is interesting because it's, I remember we spoke, I don't know, about 3 weeks ago about the way women are treated in Saudi Arabia and the way
poorly.
That... Yes. And I remember doing research about that like years ago, and it's changed so much since then, just under this new leader. And almost... Oh, I wish the North Koreans could get actual access to media.
Here's my prediction. Here's my prediction. After 1 month of women drivers, they're going to reset the rules. It's going to go back the other way.
I want to throw my seltzer at you right now.
Was that a sexist statement?
A little bit.
Was I not supposed to?
Just the teeniest, tiniest bit.
Was I not supposed to say that? I'm sorry. In sports news, you want something good? You want good news?
Sure.
This is good news.
I probably don't care.
This is the happiest story all week. Marblehead native Shalane Flanagan did something that no American woman has done in 40 years, winning the New York Marathon on Sunday. The 36-year-old Flanagan, daughter of one-time marathon world record holder Cheryl Traworgi, broke past three-time defending champion Mary Katani of Kenya with 3 miles to go just months after recovering from a fracture that kept her from competing in the Boston Marathon. Flanagan called the win the greatest moment of her life and has suggested that this may be her final race. The last American to win the New York Marathon was Mickey Gorman in both 1976 and 1977, prior to the start of Kenya's domination in distance running.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
That was spectacular.
I was going to say, I watched the video of that, and I can't say what she said as she crossed the finish line on the radio, but it was dope.
Yeah.
And just, that's the reason I love watching marathons and the Olympics and any like really extreme sports competition is just, as much as like, I mean... I run a mile in, I don't know, 9 minutes.
Yeah.
That's my personal best, I think.
I run a mile in about an hour. So and then I keel over and need a drink.
I do take 2 breaks to throw up. But just watching, it's the same reason I love watching like Gronkowski or any, you know, that's the only Patriot person I care about. That tells you how big a football player.
The thing to me that's impressive about this is Kenya is so dominant in this sport.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The Kenyans are amazing distance runners.
They just win all the time.
And the rest of the world sort of looks at it and says, well, it's marathon, we want to compete, but you more or less assume that the Kenyans are going to win.
Yeah, it's a very, like, why even bother kind of situation. Whereas, like, this, it was so wonderful just seeing the, that was my point, is beyond the fact that obviously she just won the New York Marathon. That's awesome. But the sheer sense of a combination of exhaustion and accomplishment.
Yeah. And this isn't her first go around at this. You know, she competed in the Olympics in 2012 and again in 2016. She suffered a hip injury. Oof. And wasn't able to compete and didn't know if she was going to be able to compete again. Trained her butt off for New York. And she said in an interview with ESPN afterward that she felt that she had never given her best. She still hadn't had her best run. And New York was it. New York was her best run. And she finished sixth at the Olympics in either 2012 or 2016. She's a three-time elite runner in the Boston Marathon. She's one of the best in the world. Mm-hmm. But we just assume Kenyans are running. The Kenyans are going to win. And
the Kenyans are running. The Kenyans are running.
And to see her, you know, rise to the top of her sport, because it takes years of dedication and training to be able to do that.
Well, and that's true of everything.
It's a huge accomplishment.
But that's true of everything. Is that I think that it should be very inspirational to anyone in any sort of craft to look at that and say, she came in sixth, and before that, she didn't place. And at some point, she broke her hip, and at A, B, C, D, E, F, G. But to know that she went on to win one of the most highly publicized and reputable marathons in the world, it's inspiring.
Nice job.
Yeah.
Nice job.
Get it, girl.
It's a win for the massholes.
In entertainment news, facing a growing backlash and accusations that it was overreacting to critical press coverage, the Walt Disney Company announced yesterday that it would no longer punish the Los Angeles Times over an article the company didn't like. Disney have retaliated against the Times after the newspaper published an investigative report last month on the company's tax benefits from the city of Anaheim, California. The company said the newspaper's reporters would no longer be welcome at advanced screening of Disney movies. That decision produced a loud protest over Disney's tactics, along with the threats of boycotts against the entertainment giant and of banishing its movies from awards consideration. Yesterday, the LA Film Critics Association, the New York Film Critics Circle, the Boston Society of Film Critics and the National Society of Film Critics issued a joint statement saying that had voted to, quote, disqualify Disney films from year-end awards consideration until said blackout is publicly rescinded. I'm sorry that I laughed while telling that story.
Disney backed down real fast once they found out they weren't getting any critics awards.
I would say, literally, that was released yesterday morning, and like 2 hours later, 2 hours later, 2 hours later, Disney was like, never mind.
Yeah, 2 hours later, Disney was like, no, big misunderstanding here, guys. Los Angeles Times.
Totally kidding. Somebody, it was a super joke.
Somebody spoke out of turn. Oh, and by the way, we're gay. That's the one thing that was missing from Disney's statement is, oh, by the way, we're gay.
And God bless America.
Yeah. I don't know what you're thinking. I don't know what you're thinking. As a major corporation, when you try and take on the media like that, what do you think the outcome is going to be?
Especially in this climate. I mean, it was one thing, I don't know, even as recent as 20, 25 years ago, to take on the media that way. But in this day and age, like, the media controls everything.
Yeah.
Like, we do, guys. Remember that. But honestly, like, it's in this day and age, you make one misstep with the media, you're done. And the fact that Disney is such an old and large and, I don't want to use the word reputable, but reputable organization, or at least name recognition-y, because that's a term, organization, the fact that they don't recognize that, especially attacking something like the LA Times, you know, they're not attacking the Quincy Sun.
But it wasn't like they even attacked the Times. You told the film critics that they weren't coming to screenings anymore. And the thing about film critics is film critics talk to each other, mm-hmm. and they're not in competition with each other the way that news reporters are.
Yeah.
So if you upset one, you upset all of them.
You're literally upsetting an entire union.
So it's a no-brainer that the LA Critics Circle is all going to close ranks, circle the wagons, and say, oh, no, yeah.
and
forget
that,
it.
Because and that Boston and New York is going to hop on with them.
They were the first to come out and say, none of us are going to any more Disney advanced screenings. We're not covering your movies anymore. And as soon as they did it, New York did it. And then Boston jumps in because New York is doing it. It's the only reason Boston's in there, by the way. It's because New York did it. And then the National Film Critics Association gets in. Now, suddenly, Disney's sitting there and they're like, wait a minute. We've got some important movies coming out. We need some good press so that people will come see them.
These people are important.
Yeah. It's not, it's like Star Wars. You've already sold the tickets. People are going no matter what the critics say. But other stuff like Coco, which is opening this weekend, and some of the other stuff they got coming out, you need the critics. So they very wisely changed their tune.
But that to me is what's so gross about the media industry is just that it's all political, it's all commercial, it's all business. It's the sheer fact that they were like, no, you can't do this anymore because of what you said about that about us. And then as soon as there's some threat that they're not going to get the press that they'd like or not going to get the coverage or what have you, it became, oh, never mind, that giant stand we took, we were just kidding. We tripped off that pedestal, and now we're going to stand on our knees until...
Yeah, but it's also a fundamental misread of the nature of the relationship. It's Disney saying to the critics, you need access to us more than we need you. When the critics know, and the public knows, and every other movie studio in America knows, that's not how it works. It's the opposite. The studios need the critics way more than the critics need the studios. So, good on the critics. That's a rare win for journalists this year, by the way.
I'm going to say I'd really like to high five them. I won't lie.
A lot of what they've been a lot of what they've been doing this year has been bad. This was good. So, we appreciate that. In technology news, if you had slow internet on Monday, you were not alone. Customers throughout the eastern United States, the Midwest, California, and Denver experience slow loading or a failure to load websites due to a configuration error at Level 3, a company that provides backbone routing services for several major U.S. internet providers, including Comcast. The error, known as a root leak, occurred when routers failed to find the most efficient way to move traffic between internet service providers, resulting in log jams that heavily impacted sites relying on Level 3's services. Staff at Level 3 quickly identified the problem and resolved it within 90 minutes. You wouldn't have known that hearing everyone cry in my office for the rest of the afternoon, but 90 minutes later, they had fixed the root leak.
It's so funny to hear about people complaining about something like that when, if you think back to, I don't know, 20 years ago, the...
Yeah, well, we just assume the internet now is like water. We expect that you turn the dial and it's going
and
to be there.
Yeah, and it comes
out. Yeah, and when it's not, it's like, why isn't this working? What's wrong with this? But this does expose one of the critical infrastructure issues with the internet, which is for all of the people that are using it and for all of the companies that are running websites and for all the internet service providers out there, there are only a tiny handful of companies that actually make everything work. And we saw this happen a couple of years ago. I mean, it might have been last year, actually, when there was a distributed denial of service attack on one of the domain name services, which is a company that basically takes the digital IP address of a website and turns it into the name that you recognize. So CNN's digital address might be 5.5.5.5, but you're going to CNN.com. There's a company that matches those things up. They got attacked. Everything went down.
Well, that's not terrifying at all.
And it seems to me, in an age of hacking and threats of digital terrorism, you really ought to find a way to...
Yeah, we should have a bit of a fail-safe for this.
Reduce that threat?
Yeah.
Maybe spread the load, maybe diversify the number of companies that are providing this service. One interesting thing about Monday was Google really was not affected by it. If you were using Google services, which I was, and I use some pretty, you know, heavy, intense Google data stuff every single day, all of that worked fine, but I couldn't get Gawker. Well, you can't get Gawker at all anymore, but I couldn't get...
Oh, you poor thing.
I couldn't get Gizmodo. You don't know how bad that makes my day.
That's fair.
Jezebel was taking forever to load.
I haven't worked in an office in a while, but I do recognize the struggle of not being able to go on time-killing websites.
Jezebel was taking forever to load. Is that more relevant to your interests?
Sure.
Do you understand my trauma now?
I'm so sorry,
Derek. I could not load Jezebel. That's just a huge monkey wrench in my workday.
See, you have to go on freesudoku.com and just play Sudoku until then. That loads instantly.
I never do games at work. You'd be amazed how much news I consume in a day, but I never play games at work.
Even Sudoku?
No, nothing.
It's like brain exercise.
I know it is, but the problem is every Windows machine has got solitaire on it. I don't even play that. Because as soon as I start...
Oh, I forgot Windows was a thing.
As soon as I start, it's all over. How do you forget Windows is a thing?
I'm a Mac girl, man.
Windows is good.
I am actually borrowing my mom's PC right now. It's kind of freaking me out.
Windows is way better than you remember it.
I miss Minesweeper. I will say that. I loved me some Minesweeper.
I don't think that's there anymore, but Windows is way better than you remember.
That's how I saw my first music video, because it came with the Stardock disc.
I'm not going to say it's good, but I'm not going to say Apple's good either.
So basically, you think everything's bad.
Everything's bad.
On that note, what's the weather going to be, Dee? Up in
the
sky,
stormy weather. The weather is also bad. Apparently, we turned on the winter. Folks, put on a coat if you're going out tonight. Temperatures below freezing everywhere except downtown Boston, where it's probably going to be about 34 degrees, but cold, 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 cold. Tomorrow, cold. High of about 50, lows in the mid-30s tomorrow night under mostly sunny skies. Friday, cold. Wow. Cold. Wow.
How cold? How cold inspires a wow?
Gloves, hats, scarves, multiple sweaters, and outer coat weather, folks. High on Friday in the mid-30s.
No.
High in the mid-30s. Lows in the 20s and teens on Friday night with a gusty northwest wind. Arctic blast coming in here.
So evidently when I get home tonight, I'm sewing that loose button back onto my winter coat.
Saturday.
Good to know.
Cold. Not quite as windy as Friday. Highs in the upper 30s. Lows in the mid-20s Saturday night. Sunday, partly cloudy. Highs in the mid-40s. Lows in the mid-30s. And then Monday, little rain blows in here. Highs in the mid-40s. Lows in the mid-40s. Cold.
I am cold talking about it.
Yeah. So Friday, we're getting our first real winter kiss. Hope you're ready for that, kids. And by the way, if you got sensitive plants, time to kiss them goodbye, because trust me, we're getting some killing freezes and growing season is over. It's done.
Folks, this is my first New England winter back in 3 years. So, just send me coat style vibes. That'd be great. Thank you.
In positive winter news.
I'm already cold.
If you like positive winter news, which is a good thing, it does happen. Killington is open for your skiing enjoyment this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
First ski of the year, kids. Get on up to Killington and you can take advantage of that. It is WMFO Medford, and we've got something kind of important that we'd like to say to you right now. Let me just find this one thing, which... Oh, God. What are we talking about here? That's what I'm looking for. All right. I'm going to go with... We'll go with this one. So, here's an important message from WMFO directly to you.
It all started in January of 1970. Darling, 40 years later, we still play your freeform music. WMFO's annual drive is in effect. We need your support to keep WMFO running so we can keep giving you your favorite music and bringing you the shows you love, such as The Lounge, On the Town with Mikey D, Bubbles in the Think Tank, and many more. Donate now by logging on to donate.wmfo.org. That's donate.wmfo.org. Or mail a check made payable to trustees of Tufts College and send it to WMFO. P.O. Box 65, Medford, Massachusetts, 02155. Thank you from all of us at your freeform station, 91.5 WMFO.
That's right, kids. It's give us your money time. We only do this once a year.
Pretty, please.
Where we ask you to give us your money. I don't know why they don't put the big picture in that promo. That really drives me up a wall.
Bunch of jerks.
Anyway.
I mean, wonderful people you should give money to.
As we've done in past years. And by the way, in case you're wondering, you know, like, oh, you guys are part of Tufts. You get all the money in the world. No, we don't.
No, we do not.
We have to go in and we have to beg for a meager allotment of funds from the Tufts Student Community Council. And they give us a meager allotment. But if we want to do things like keep our digital board running and all of our other equipment running, we have to go out and get that money on our own. So the money that you give to WMFO, we're not blowing it on pizza. We're not blowing it on snacks. We invest it in new digital technology for the station.
Yes.
To keep the station on the air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, crystal clear digital.
Like this microphone I'm speaking into right now is a result of those donations.
Broadcast.
That's where it goes.
And online. So everything that powers us, however you listen to us, a lot of it has been paid for through these donations.
Well, and what's great too is that it's for us, but it's also for students who want to learn how to do radio, who want to learn broadcasting in general, and your donations are going to help that.
Correct. The next Brian Joyce.
The next generation.
I don't know if I want to say that.
She's sitting right here.
You could. You could be funding the next Brian Joyce is all I'm going to say.
Hi, Brian.
The next Brian Joyce.
If you're listening.
Could be because of your donation. And you get stuff.
You do.
This is the cool thing. We send you stuff if you donate money to us. So here's what you get. For a buck, we'll mention you on the air. We will say thank you for giving us a buck.
Hi, Mom.
That's
She'll
great.
Give you a buck.
Just a buck, and we will mention you on the air. For $5, you get a WMFO bumper sticker. Now, I will tell you, not only will police not give you speeding tickets, but women or men, whichever you prefer, will flock to your vehicle when they see that WMFO bumper sticker proudly displayed on the rear of it. They will flock to your vehicle. You'll be sitting there saying, where did all of these attractive people come from? And then you'll look
at the bumper sticker.
Then you'll look at the WMFO bumper sticker and say, oh, that's what was missing my whole life. For $10, we will send you a keychain / a bottle opener with the WMFO logo on it.
Everyone likes a keychain / bottle opener.
Bottle openers.
That's pretty much a universal thing.
You want to be the most popular person at the party, at the tailgate, at the Friday night drinking in the park? Whatever you're doing.
President's Golf Course, Quincy.
You want to be the person with the bottle opener.
Yeah.
The person with the bottle
Everyone
opener.
Everyone loves the person with the bottle opener.
Is everybody's friend. If you prefer mixed drinks, you can give us $25 and we will send you a WMFO shot glass. You can mix your own drinks or just do shots.
I would say technically that would be a non-mixed drink.
No, there are mixed shots.
Oh, like an Irish car.
Like a duck Irish fart.
What's a duck fart?
Duck fart is, what is it? It's, oh my God, I should know this.
Because an Irish car bomb is Jameson and Bailey's dropped in a Guinness.
Yeah, it's also horribly racist, but you're
I'm
Irish.
Allowed to say it.
I know. You're not, but because we don't want to be those people. A duck fart is Bailey's, Kahlua, and Seagram's 7. It's good. It's good. What's hair on your chest?
That sounds terrifying.
Send us $50. We'll send you a WMFO t-shirt.
Oh,
so that when you're aware, when you're away from your car,
people still know that they should hit on you.
Which has already attracted all of these attractive people because you got the WMFO bumper sticker.
Yeah.
And you're going to be their friend because you got the bottle opener.
Mm-hmm.
You got the t-shirt now. And everybody, everywhere you go, is going to be like, oh my God, WMFO supporter. So sexy. For $100, we will send you a tote bag full of swag. That's pretty nice.
That's
dope. You get it all. You get the bumper sticker, the keychain bottle opener, the shot glass, the t-shirt, and you get a tote bag.
Hey, Mom, if you're listening right now, can you just donate the $100 for me so that I can, number one, keep my job, and number two, get all that stuff? Because it's so awesome, and everyone should want it.
$500, we'll put a plaque with your name on it somewhere in the station. We've got some over there, actually.
I was going to say, I'm currently looking at three different very attractive plaques. And I actually know those people's names because they just stay here.
We could.
We never get rid of them.
They're here forever.
They will be here forever. This is your way to just make, it's like Neil Armstrong putting his footprint on the moon.
For $1,000.
Derek will make out with
you're
you.
Super generous. No, you get a station tour and lunch with the executive board.
Oh, that is very cool.
And then, as I do every year, I am offering the big picture special nuclear option. The big picture special nuclear option. I happen to know that we're looking to raise $5,000 mm-hmm. in this donation cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if you donate $5,000, donate.wmfo.org. That's where you go. Donate.wmfo.org. You can see how much money we've raised so far. $1,135 of our $5,000 goal. Pretty good.
Yeah,
been going
doing
for
well.
A week.
Doing well.
You donate $5,000, you can take this show off the air. If you hate the big picture so much that you are willing to put your money where your mouth is,
Derek, we didn't discuss this.
For $5,000, no one has ever taken me up on this. For $5,000, you can make the big
picture.
Now
I'm scared someone will.
You can make the big picture go away forever. It will never broadcast again.
On the flip side, could you make it be on every night of the week if you wanted to?
No, $5,000, you can get this show off the air forever.
But for $4,500, I will make out with you.
Oh. Well, now that's a different offer.
No, that's prostitution. I don't think we can do that.
That's a different offer. Not the offer I was expecting.
Please don't take the show off the air.
Okay, yeah. Please don't donate money expecting to make out with Shay.
Or just take the show off the air.
Probably not going to happen. Anyway, donate.wmfo.org. Go over there. See what your options are. Remember, $5,000, you can take this show off the air permanently. Guaranteed.
And please remember that we did not discuss this, Derek.
Please free me from this wretched hell of my existence. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, you poor thing.
I'm kidding. I love you all. I love the show. I love the news. I love talking about shooting all the time, which is what we're going to be doing
That's
later
like
tonight.
That's my favorite thing in the world.
But when we come back, did you hear the other stories that caught our attention this week here on WMFO Medford?
The next time you're buying bacon, look through that window on the package. I'm Sarah Beck, consumer meat specialist for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. All bacon packages must have a transparent window so you can see a representative slice. And chances are, if you check the window, you can get the kind of bacon you like. Bacon with a high proportion of lean is obviously a better buy. Bacon with the lean distributed as streaks throughout the slice will be more attractive and crisper when cooked.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all they've done. You can help by simply sharing your time, lending a warm smile, a supportive hand, or a sympathetic ear to someone who needs it. Everyone can do something to make veterans know just how much we appreciate their service. Please visit www.volunteer.va.gov. What will you do?
WMFO Medford. You are listening to The Big Picture. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. So if you want to give us a call, we'd love to hear from you. It's 855-915-WMFO. And if you need the numbers at the end of that, just look at your phone. They're right on there. And now we're at one of our favorite parts of the show called Did You Hear? Where we quiz each other on the various news events that have happened in the past week. And I'm going to start us off. Derek, Barack Obama.
That would be the 43rd president of the United States. Am I correct in that? Is that the right count? 43rd or 42nd? 43rd.
44th.
Okay.
But that's not what I'm looking for.
When do you get to be 44?
44?
Oh, yeah. No, I guess that's right, because Bush Sr. was 41. Because I'm counting on that, and I'm getting my
and
Bushes mixed up.
And DT is 45.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the orange president may or may not count as an actual president. The jury is out on that. But he had jury duty today.
He did.
And he showed up and signed copies of his books and took pictures with everybody and then went home at lunchtime, just like most people get called for jury duty do.
I would say that's what I love, though, is that he was the group, the panel that he was in, was not called to serve, which I thought, that's what I love about jury duty is it doesn't discriminate. I had jury duty exactly once in my life so far, and I went and I was like, this dude's a doctor and this girl works at 7-Eleven. We're all just sitting here together.
Can I tell you something? If I'm a defense attorney or I'm a prosecuting attorney, I'm impaneling the president. I want the president on my jury.
Right? That's what I found so shocking about it is that, you know, they ask you a couple of questions and stuff. I don't know if any of you have ever served or almost served as it were on jury duty, but they ask you a couple questions just about like your background and how educated you are, how this, how that.
It's Barack Obama. You don't need to ask any of those questions.
How do you not want Barack? But that's what I love is that he was just treated like any other American citizen, which is what's so cool about jury duty, despite the fact that it's really annoying and boring.
Either your pool gets called in or it doesn't. And his pool didn't get called in.
That's exactly what it was. They just didn't get called in. They got dismissed. But
I got to wonder if Barack Obama is in danger of being impaneled and doesn't want jury duty, like the rest of us don't want jury duty, is he going to sit there and be like, I can spot a guilty person from a mile away? is he going to sit there and play that?
Well, and with that in mind, regardless of what the case is, can you imagine being prosecuted and looking over and seeing Barack Obama in the jury? I can't even imagine. You're sitting there being like, oh my God, I really hope they don't think I committed this murder.
What do you do?
Is that the old president?
Is that the president? No, I'm done for. And what do you do with the Secret Service guys? Are they like around him, like near the jury box, or?
That's the other thing is that like that's I just kept picture like I really wish they had served on the jury because I kept picturing it's almost like one of those. I hate Robot Chicken, but it's the first thing that comes to my mind. It feels like a Robot Chicken cartoon where it's like a really outlandish scenario that you just have to kind of interpret how it's going to go.
And you would have had, like, if he had been impaneled and the trial went on for a few days, after the first day, you're going to have all kinds of people hanging outside the courthouse.
Oh, yeah.
Like, waiting to meet the president. Like, sign my book. Hey, Mr. President, give me a selfie. You know? It would have been fun, is what I'm saying. It would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm kind of sad that he got dismissed, to be honest.
Yeah. At POTUS.
At POTUS. Well, I mean, that's the original presidential Twitter handle.
Yes. It's still the presidential Twitter handle.
But Donald Trump said he doesn't want to use it, or is he using it now?
No, he's using it.
Is there something new about this that I don't know about?
Something happened last week.
Oh, it's going to make me cringe. Just tell me.
A Twitter customer service employee on his or her final day on the job, deactivated the account on their way out the door. The account was down for 11 minutes. And while that may make a lot of Americans happy. It is not a good thing. It's raised a lot of very sticky questions for Twitter about what kind of access their customer service people have to people's accounts and who is exactly in charge of activating, deactivating, and posting in accounts.
Well, that is absolutely, as much as like you all just heard me laugh, but I can see the problem that people might have with that just based on the fact that it's supposed to, if you have a Twitter account, it's supposed to be you. It's short of posting something illegal or incredibly offensive, which I guess would fall, you know, into nudity or aggressive nudity. In this day and age, I don't even know what's legal in terms of nudity. But you're supposed to have control over it yourself. So I do understand people kind of rising up and not being happy about somebody messing with it. That being said, high five to that disgruntled Twitter employee, because that's like, if you're going to do something, we were just talking about our friend who quit his job and locked a boombox playing, I believe it was Slayer or something like that, in the cabinet. If you're going to do something, leaving a company, I mean, that's...
Yeah, it's, no, not what we should be doing.
No, I'm not saying it's okay, and I'm not saying that it's cool, and it is definitely, like you said, going to raise a lot of questions about how much access Twitter employees have to our accounts, and in that case, any social media employee. But still, I mean, that's... You can't pretend that's not at least a little funny.
Oh, it's funny. I'm not going to argue that it's funny, but it's also wildly dangerous and irresponsible and shouldn't be happening. Sorry to be the no fun guy in all of this, but there are broader questions that are raised
by this. That's weird. You're never the no fun guy, Derek.
I'm never the no fun guy. It's WMFO Medford.
It is WMFO Medford. Andrea Jenkins.
Is that Rick Jenkins' wife? No.
No, that's...
Is that Rick Jenkins' sister?
Sims.
Is she related to Rick Jenkins?
I don't believe so.
No. Andrea Jenkins?
Mm-hmm. Don't cheat.
She won an election last night?
Yes.
She is the first transgender member of the Virginia House of No...
The first black openly transgender woman elected to political office in the United States in general. And
no, because there were two. There was one that got into the Virginia legislature.
But she's the first black openly transgender woman to be elected to political office. This is she won a seat on Minneapolis City Council.
That is correct. I was thinking about the one in Virginia because there was a transgender woman.
Yes, that's true.
Who won a seat in the House of Delegates or whatever the heck they call it down there.
But she won by 73%, which is unheard of. And she, the 56-year-old poet and historian who transitioned in her 30s, spent years as a policy aide to two previous council members in the same ward.
Hmm.
But I thought this was really just cool. And important, and speaks to just how far we've come as a society. Because I mean, if you think even like a decade ago,
but I have to ask the question of why it's a big deal that we are treating people with equality.
But it should,
why is that a big deal?
It shouldn't be, but it is. It shouldn't be, but it is always what I think about that subject. It's unfortunate that it has to be a big deal. It's unfortunate that it has to be.